I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Campaign 2018 is now underway. Over the course of the next 2 months, we'll be bringing you interviews with almost all of the statewide major party candidates who are running in the August 14th primary. Today, my guest is Brenda Siegel, who is a candidate for the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. Brenda, great to have you here.
Thanks for having me.
Brenda Siegel is the director of the Southern Vermont Dance Festival. She describes herself as, quote, a low-income single parent, and she says she's running in part to bring a new perspective to state government that reflects the needs of working people. Now, Brenda, you have not run for office before. Some people might see that as a liability. You, in fact, see that really as an asset. So explain that to us.
I think that we look at leadership wrong in this country. I think we really need to begin to look at leadership from the perspective of who has been strong community leaders, who has put forth a vision and been able to implement that vision. Some of the strongest leaders that I know in my life are people that have faced strong adversity and have created incredible things throughout our state and throughout the country. And what I want to see in our next governor is someone who has that track record, because I don't think that the problems that need to be fixed are going to be fixed until we have those voices at the table.
And what are some of those problems that need to be fixed?
We have a lot of wealth inequality in this state. We have a lot of poverty in this state. So one thing that we really need to work on is lifting people from the bottom up. While I personally believe that there's a moral imperative to build our economy from the bottom up, I also think it's important for Vermonters to understand that whether or not you agree with me, there's an economic imperative. We waste a lot of money with the stigma that's attached to poverty, and we can make huge differences if we begin to lift from the bottom, and that includes saving us money and putting more money in Vermonters' pockets.
What do you think would be the single most important thing that would help the state achieve that goal?
I think that it's intersectional, so it's hard to say that one thing would help. I think that's part of the problem, is that we're always siloing one issue from another. So we need to work on the bills that should have been signed this year, the paid family medical leave, raising the minimum wage, the bill that handled toxics in Bennington. We also need to work on things like homelessness, which we're wasting exponential money putting homeless people in hotels in the winter instead of just finding permanent housing for them. We need a housing first model in this state. So those are some of the issues. We also can begin to work more quickly towards 90% renewable energy, which brings jobs, it attracts people to our state, and it helps to grow our business in this state. And it's, again, there's an environmental imperative, but regardless on if you agree with that or not, there is still an economic imperative to work towards that goal.
Well, as you know, across the street at the State House, we have quite the impasse going on between Governor Phil Scott and Democratic leaders over statewide property tax rates. Governor wants to use one-time surplus money to ensure that there's not an increase in either the residential rate or the non-residential rate. The Democrats have proposed stabilizing the residential rate, and they think it makes more sense to put the rest of that one-time surplus money into the teachers' retirement fund. Their plan leaves an increase in the non-residential statewide property tax rate. If you were governor, how would you resolve this disagreement?
Well, if I were governor, we wouldn't be having this disagreement. It's exceptionally important that we pay down teacher pensions. That's a bill that we owe. And as a low-income person, one thing that I know is that when I owe money, I can't go out and buy a new dress. Phil Scott is trying to buy a new dress when he has bills to pay. That's really not responsible governance. I also believe very strongly that education is an important investment in our future, not just our children's future, but the future of the state. And undermining education is not how we balance our budget. This governor, Phil Scott, is working to actually pay down non-residential property tax rates and for private companies. And what he needs to be doing is supporting education and figuring out a creative solution to the property tax situation in this state.
So the governor would say there's enough one-time surplus money to do what the Democrats want to do and do what he wants to do. Is he wrong?
That money needs to go to teacher pensions. The other thing that's really important to understand about Phil Scott's plan is that this year, 50% of property taxes would be higher in this state in his plan. So it's disingenuous for him to say that he is keeping our tax bills from going up. The other thing is that in years 3, 4, and 5, all of our tax bills will go up if we use his plan. So his plan just does not work. Furthermore, the legislature is trying to compromise with him right now in the current bill they just passed. It isn't ideal. It isn't what the Democrats wanted to pass. And Phil Scott is just refusing to come to the table. That has been his MO in the last 2 years. And he isn't doing what's best for Vermonters. He's doing what's best for big business, and he's doing what's best for non-residents of this state.
So the governor would look at the non-residential tax stand that he's taken and say, you know, it will help support a lot of businesses in Vermont. He also says, you know, a lot of people in Vermont rent their homes, their apartments, and if you increase the non-residential rate, then that's going to mean that their rents are going to go up. So isn't there an affordability issue there?
Phil Scott has shown time and time again that he's not protecting affordability for the working class and lower income in this state. He showed that by the bills that he vetoed this year, and he also is showing that right now with the budget standoff, because the end result of this budget standoff, if there isn't a compromise, if he refuses to come to the table, could be a shutdown. And that shutdown will affect thousands of Vermonters, and not just the state employees, but also the safety of our roads and the schools moving forward for next year, because they don't know what their budgets are finally. And all over the education budget, which 97% of our towns voted up in their town meeting. And I've been in town meeting, and I'm sure you've been in town meeting, and I know that we talk about how it's going to raise our property taxes every year, sometimes for hours, and we still voted those education budgets up this year. So Phil Scott, this standoff is not about the working people and the low-income Vermonters. This standoff is about his agenda and his special interest.
You said earlier you talked about the issue of income inequality in Vermont and how serious an issue that was. If you were governor, would you support raising the income tax on wealthy Vermonters to provide additional revenue for other programs?
Yes, I think that everybody needs to pay their fair share. So I think that there's lots of Vermonters in this state that are higher income that are happy to pay a higher rate so that they are paying in, and that low-income Vermonters and middle-income Vermonters have some support. I also think that ultimately what Vermonters want, lower taxes don't always equal more money in your pockets, and higher taxes don't always equal less money in your pockets. There's another part of that equation. So it's essential that Vermonters understand that what they really want is more money in their pockets, which I'm sure they do. I'm sure everyone knows that. And how we get there is the question. And some of the policies that were vetoed this year would have ultimately put more money in enough Vermonters' pockets so that they could be walking into stores and purchasing goods and eating at restaurants. And ultimately, that would be a boost for our economy. We know that wealth doesn't trickle down, and we know, in fact, that poverty does trickle up. And that's what's happening right now across the country and definitely within this state.
Let's go to our callers and start off today with Beth, who is calling from Rutland. Hi, Beth. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. I would like to ask this candidate, and good luck with your run.
Thank you.
You know. I would like to see the next governor revisit paid sick leave, not the family leave, the sick leave, which I believe has already gone into effect for full-time workers in Vermont. And as I told the screener, there are a lot of Vermonters who work at least 2 part-time jobs, and I believe we deserve 1 sick day a year, at least. Thank you. I'll listen.
Okay, Beth, thanks very much. Your thoughts about that?
So I testified this year on paid family and medical leave, and I was disappointed that some of the that this bill didn't include protection and sick leave for people who themselves were sick, also for bereavement. So I think that I agree completely with Beth. I think we need to revisit this and make sure that we're saying we can stay home with family members who are ill, but we can't take care of ourselves when we're sick. And we need to revisit that and make sure that all of us, including there's a lot of self-employed people in this state, are able to pay in and have that benefit of the paid family medical leave insurance, which includes sick leave.
If I remember that legislation correctly, it was paid for entirely by a small income tax surcharge on employees and not on employers at all. Do you think that was fair?
I think it would have been better if it was the bill that was before, which was 50% employers and 50% employees. I still think that the amount that we people were paying, I think I heard an average of $40 a year, but I'm not 100% sure that's the right number, was still worth that the passage of that bill. I think that people want to have a way to continue to be paid. And when people are fortunate enough to not be ill or not have family members that are ill, they want to know that they've paid in so that their friends, we're in Vermont. We all want to help each other, regardless of our different beliefs. And so that bill made it so that our friends and our family members could take the time they needed to care for their loved ones. And that's just humanity. And ultimately, it makes a stronger workforce and a stronger tax base because people aren't quitting their jobs when they have to take care of loved ones.
Let's talk to Elena. Hi, Elena.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. Hi, Brenda.
Hi.
I was calling to ask about your opinion on a bill that recently was vetoed by Governor Scott. The bill was S-281, and it was intended to mitigate systemic racism. Mm-hmm. It would have included a panel of people of color and a new position of chief civil rights officer. This is something that came to my attention from a friend, and I think the bill was initially drafted in January of this year, and I didn't even know about it until Governor Scott had vetoed it, and I got that information. I'm not exactly sure what the reason was that he had vetoed it, but I was curious what your take on that was and how you would have approached that. I'll take my answer off the air. Thanks.
Okay, thanks for your phone call.
We have a serious problem with systemic racism in this state. We are, I believe, in the top five in the country for racial disparity in our prison system. We are definitely stopping people of color more often than we are stopping white people on the highways. And then there's issues within our schools and just throughout our entire system, just like there is across the country. But we like to believe in Vermont that we're very progressive and we aren't. This is not an issue that's touching us, but in fact, it is touching us, and it's touching us in a major way. So this bill was exceptionally important. I was very upset, and I spoke out about it when it was vetoed. I saw something come across my screen today, and I'm not sure if I'm correct, but I think it might have passed again and be going back to the governor's desk. So I would urge Vermonters to be calling Phil Scott and making sure he signs the bill this time, if that's correct, because we need to make sure that we're dealing with this issue head on, and we need to make sure that people of color are on the panel and people marginalized communities that have faced these issues throughout their lives.
Let's talk to Rob, who is calling from Burlington. Hey, Rob, welcome to the program.
Hi. My comment is regarding, I see a real the paradigm of our aging population in the state of Vermont, at least now in the governor's eyes, is a real challenge. And I see it as a great opportunity. And I'm curious how the candidate would work with not only TJ Donovan, who just established the Elder Protection Initiative out of his office, but also working with Act 172, which is the Older Vermonters Working Group Act, to really change the paradigm that we have a great opportunity as our state gets older.
Okay, Rob, thanks very much for your phone call. You know, one of the most amazing statistics I came across in the last year or so was Vermont's population projections for the next 12 to 15 years. Mm-hmm. And the overall population of Vermont is expected to go down by 1 or 2% by the year 2030.
Mm-hmm.
The population of people over 65 is expected to increase by 50%. So getting to Rob's question, is this something that Vermont can take advantage of? Are there opportunities here?
I guess I need to look into this a little bit more. Are you still on the air, Rob? Yes? Okay. I would love to hear in what ways you find it to be an opportunity.
We lost Rob.
Well, I do know that I have deep respect for the people that have. I think once you're in Vermont, you want to stay in Vermont. So in terms of what I do know is that if we can attract people here with moving towards 90% renewable energy and policies that really lift from the bottom, then we're going to keep Vermonters here. I don't see a problem with our aging population, and I would love to hear more about the opportunity. So I'm open to that. I haven't heard of it spoken that way, and it's, to me, that sounds really exciting. I think that's an exciting outlook. I always think that looking at things with vision and hope is better than talking about them with doom and gloom. We have an incredible state here, so why aren't we utilizing what does exist already? And that is going to include an aging population, so we should use it as an opportunity.
Let's talk to Evan, who is calling from Berlin. Hi, Evan. Welcome to the program.
So my question is on gun rights, and I'd like to know Brenda's position on Vermonters' gun rights and on Vermonters' right to protect their homes and self-defense. So I'll take my answer off here.
And we knew this year, Brenda, that the legislature gave its approval to some gun control legislation that raises the age to purchase a gun from 18 to 21, expanded background checks to include private sales, and also banned the sale of large-capacity magazines. Would you have supported that legislation?
I would have supported that legislation, yes. While I strongly do support the Second Amendment, and especially in this state, there are a lot of hunters, children are dying across this country, and we cannot excuse the death of children for that right. We are not taking away people's guns. I think a lot of gun owners, I've spoken to gun owners across the state since I've entered the race, who have said that they were concerned about the bills when they passed, and that they had definitely come out against their passage, but have since learned that they're really not infringing at all upon their rights to own a gun. They're just protecting our kids better.
You know, some people who oppose this legislation said nothing in this bill is really going to help any kind of mass shooting in the future. Do you think that this bill would be effective?
I think that it does take the first steps necessary to be able to lessen the chance. I don't.
Okay. Let's switch gears and talk about health care. There was a bill in the legislature this year that would have provided primary coverage to all Vermonters, kind of a first step towards a full-blown single-payer system. What are your thoughts? Do you support a government-financed health care system that would cover all Vermonters?
Healthcare is a human right. It should be a human right. We should have found a way to fund Act 48, and I certainly support the legislation that was universal primary care. I believe that we have to work towards that. People cannot be sick or dying or watch their loved ones or children sick or die because they do not have the same access to healthcare. And by access, I don't mean that it's available and they could get it if they can afford it. I mean that it's available and everyone gets it.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Alton in Wolcott. Hey, Alton, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'd like to ask the candidate what her position is on the use of ridgelines for commercial wind power.
So I think that we have to move towards 90% renewable energy. I am in favor of communities having a timeline in which to come up with a plan that gets them to 90% renewable energy. I want to find out more about how that would be affected, but I do think that we have to have, in our state, our towns like to have a say in what goes on. But that say can't include not getting to renewable energy. It has to get to 90% renewable energy. So if communities think that they can do that with solar or water, that's great, but we have to see a plan that works because it's an imperative for our state.
What if a community just does not want to have a ridgeline wind project? Should they have the ability to say, no, we're not going to have it?
I think that they should have the opportunity to come up with another plan that gets them to 90% renewable energy before we say, yes, you are.
Also wanted to talk to you about water quality issues. There was a bill in the legislature to raise money for water quality, Lake Champlain, the other lakes and streams across the state. It didn't pass. It really called for another study of that issue. Do you think lawmakers should have supported a long-term revenue source for water quality projects?
I think that we have to clean up our lakes. We do not have a choice. This is... I grew up in Vermont. I was born in Brattleboro Memorial Hospital. Part of my childhood includes, you know, jumping in lakes and rivers and drinking fresh, clean water. And that is part of how I see Vermont. I mean, that is why it's so important for us to get to 90% renewable energy. We need to make sure that we keep the Vermont that we all know and love. And we, in order to do that, we have to make sure that we're cleaning up our waterways and that we're moving towards renewable energy. It's essential for us to, in order to keep our way of life. I think we often talk about the Vermont way of life, and we think it conflicts with moving to the 21st century. And sometimes I think it takes moving to the 21st century in order to preserve our way of life.
You talked about that 90% renewable energy goal. By when?
Well, currently, our goal is by 2050. I would like to see us move more quickly towards that goal. I don't have a date in mind at this time, but I think it's essential that we move at a more rapid speed. I don't see us taking the initiatives quickly enough.
And do you think each town should be meeting that goal, or is that more of a statewide target?
I think that it's a statewide target, but I think that we do want to give our communities an opportunity to come up, like I said, come up with a plan for 90% renewable energy, a plan that will work. And I think ultimately we have to decide as a state that we're going to get there. So if communities are not able to do that, then we do have to make sure that that the initiatives are taken in order to get to 90% renewable energy.
One of the ideas over the legislature this year was a per parcel fee. Couple of dollars a month, or I think it was maybe a dollar a month, $2 a month. That'd be, you know, $12 or $20 a year on every piece of land in the state of Vermont to put several million dollars into the water quality cleanup fund. Could you see yourself supporting something like that?
I don't know enough about that proposal in order to take a position on it.
Okay. Let's talk to John, who's calling from Montpelier. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm worried about the taxes in the state, and I'm wondering if there's going to be a review of the current use program. There are 17,000 people in the program. They get a $550 million tax break, and the blue-collar workers pay for it. And I'm wondering if there's going to be a review of the program down the line. And thank you so much for taking my call.
John, thanks for your phone call.
I think that we have to, we should always be reviewing all of our tax policies so that we're making sure we're keeping them up to date and that we're doing what's the best for Vermonters. I think that we can look creatively at solutions to our property taxes in this state. We don't want to undermine education. We need to fully fund education. We can find a solution to the way that we pay for it.
You know, we've been talking about a lot of issues here, taxes, health care, the environment, energy, education funding. I'm wondering, outside of that group of issues, what do you think is the single most important issue facing Vermonters and perhaps one that doesn't get enough attention?
I don't know if it's the single most important, but it's a very important issue, the opioid epidemic. Many people know by now that 3 months ago, my nephew died of a heroin overdose. And he was the son of my brother who died of a heroin overdose 20 years ago. I had decided to run on March 7th, and March 8th is when I got the call.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Thank you. I watched the system fail him. He had been sober for a year. He had had to go into court for warrant that he got while he was in treatment for not showing up at court, but he had been in treatment doing the right thing. And a lot of shame was thrown at him. The stigma is preventing us from solving this problem. We need to focus on harm reduction first, and then we need to put real resources into treatment on demand, recovery and prevention, and mental health resources for dual diagnosis support. If I broke my leg and went to the hospital, then I would not, then they would not turn me away and say, you have to go home and come back later. But when people try to go to treatment for this disease, they are turned away sometimes for 5 days, sometimes for 30 days, and they do not get the support they need. There is no long-term treatment in this state. In 2016, there were 18.4 deaths per 100,000, and the largest increase in the last year due to synthetic opioid fentanyl.
And so the state has set up some different programs in various parts of the state. Are you saying that there's just not enough programs and availability at this time?
There's a waiting list for all of the programs in this state. There's not a waiting list for all of the programs. There's a waiting list for many of the harm reduction programs. We have a lot of stigma around Narcan and around safe injection sites, which we haven't started yet, and clean needles. The clean needle exchanges are essential. Otherwise, we end up with problems like hepatitis C and HIV, which get spread to also the population that does not have opiate use disorder. So we're ultimately, our kids are dying, and we're not willing to take the steps we need to or put the financial resources in to get to a place where we slow down the death. We're slowing down the rate slightly in Vermont, but we're not. There are still more deaths in the last year than there were the previous year. Every 8 minutes, I believe, in this country, someone dies of a heroin overdose.
So this would be a very top priority for you.
Absolutely. I think we can pay for it by moving to our tax and regulate system for cannabis. So I think we have all of this. We have the resources we need here. We have the solutions we need, and we just need to make sure that we prioritize it. Because regardless of what you believe, the opioid epidemic is hitting every single person in this state, whether or not you have a family member or know someone who has overdosed or who is suffering from opiate use disorder. There is panhandling. There is theft. There are things we have never faced in this state, and that's the collateral damage. And what we know is that with harm reduction, deaths slow down or stop, and collateral damage slows down. It is essential that we begin to put the appropriate resources into this, because just like when I have a leaky sink, if I wait and don't fix the leak, it gets bigger and more expensive. We can't continue to allow this leak to grow. And this is our children's lives. And when it's not impacting our children, their friends have rituals around heroin overdose, because it is so common for them that their friends die of a heroin overdose. We need to look at this as the real problem and the disease that it is within this state.
So explain to us the key elements of the policy of harm reduction.
Harm reduction in other countries is a little bit different, but here in this, where we can go in this, I believe, is safe injection sites and clean needle exchanges, and Narcan that isn't limited to single Narcan per use, because we actually know that it often takes more than one dose of Narcan to stop an overdose. And we also know that dead addicts don't recover, and they don't pay for problems that they may have caused while they were using. So we need to start there, because harm reduction is the first step. Also, when people have these sites, they have access to social workers and care that they need. So when they are ready to go to treatment, if we have treatment on demand and if we have long-term treatment in the state, which we don't currently, then we can get people into treatment when they are ready, which is essential for this disease. Because the way the disease works is you might be ready on Monday, but when the bed is ready on Friday, you might not be ready anymore. And it's really important that we're getting people into treatment. And there's police all over the state that would love to be able, when they arrest someone, to bring them to treatment and not jail.
I want to thank you for sharing your personal experience in this issue and how it affects your policies as well. I really appreciate you doing that.
Thank you.
Let's talk to Aaron, who is calling from Fairhaven. Hi, Aaron. Welcome to the program.
Hello.
What's on your mind? Yep.
Okay. First of all, I wanted to say I'm very much agreeing with a lot of what you're saying, Brenda.
Thank you.
And you know, I wanted to also touch on the education system as well, because I believe that, you know, sustainability and renewable resources need to be introduced into the education system and the infrastructure of the education system. It'll reduce the cost to the taxpayers and also benefit the education system. And I was wondering on any kind of practices that you were interested in.
Well, you took my line that it will reduce the cost. I believe really strongly that we need to – that's part of the 90% moving to 90% renewable energy, and that's part of an economic package. Renewable energy in schools will help our schools cut costs. And on top of that, it is a oftentimes buildings where we could put solar. It would be excellent in order to get to renewable buildings for our schools. We may not be able to build new buildings, but to work with the ones that we have to get there, and renewable resources altogether.
Let's talk to Joel, who's calling from Brattleboro. Hey, Joel, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Bob. Hi, Bob. Hi, Brenda. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. I was wondering, as governor, and I think we're ready for a person like you as governor in the state, how would you work with our three members in Congress to keep the current administration in check? And I'll take my answer off here.
I've been known not to shy away from speaking my mind. And currently, I think we're missing that a little bit with this administration. We really need to begin to see the governor of the state speak out against issues that are happening, whether it's health care or in currently the family separation. We live on a border, and the fact that this governor has not spoken other than to say that's not happening at our border is not enough. We really need someone who's going to speak loudly against what is happening and to do everything they can to protect Vermonters within this state in the legislation that passes from what comes from Washington. So that is how I would be working with them.
I wanted to go back to your idea of the tax and regulate marijuana model as a way to provide revenue for the opioid treatment that you were discussing. What do you say to those folks who say, you know, we've already got a couple of legal drugs, we've got tobacco, we've got alcohol. The last thing we need is a third.
So one thing that we know is that prohibition doesn't work. Didn't work with alcohol, and it doesn't work with other drugs. And the other thing is our kids know where to get marijuana. The best thing for them is education. And the best thing for us is to get the revenue that comes and to regulate it and make sure that it is safe, because across the country it is starting to be laced with fentanyl. We want to make sure that we have safe, regulated cannabis and that we're using it that we're able to make sure that we have all the resources and studies and research that we need to educate our kids so that they can make a decision about the use instead of keeping it underground. Underground does not help.
Brenda Siegel is one of the four candidates seeking the Democratic gubernatorial nomination. If you'd like to learn more about her candidacy, you can go to her website, brendaforvermont.com. Did I get that right?
You did get it.
Good. Brenda, many thanks for being on the program today.
Thanks so much for having me.